Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips and the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th day of July, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Before that, we should tell folks that if they're looking for us live on, you know, the pictures and streaming and all that, Steve Ray's not here, and it's not set up, so you just have to listen to our voices.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to get us set up.
That we might have some amount of streaming. Well, we're going to keep working on that. Hang tight, and you'll see. With any luck, you'll see us soon.
Yeah, I'm trying to set that up, but it seems to have crashed. Okay.
It's like the copier at work, you know.
Is that the cameras here in the studio that
you're happening? when we're busy or on a deadline, and then suddenly it jams.
Yeah, exactly.
Or it needs your printer at home needs yellow ink, even though you're just trying to print a text document.
They can smell fear.
That's right.
That's right. You don't have cyan. I'm printing black and white. But you don't have cyan.
I've always hated printers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Rage Against the Machine is probably about printers.
About printers, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so it seems like every other week the lead story is about some new Windows flaw, and quite frankly, I'm tired of it. Yes, this month released patches for 84 new security flaws, including yet another 0 day, but we can talk about those later. If you don't know by now that Windows is not only not secure but absolutely unsecurable, one more news item won't help. Today, we're going to talk about Google's Chrome OS Flex, a new version of Chrome OS that's designed for businesses and schools to install and run on old PCs and Macs. Google first started testing Chrome OS Flex earlier this year in an early access preview, and the company has now resolved 600 bugs to roll out Flex to businesses and schools and, oh, by the way, individuals. Chrome OS Flex is designed primarily for people, schools, and businesses running old Windows PCs, as Google has been testing and verifying devices from Acer, Asus, Dell, HP, Lenovo, LG, Toshiba, many more OEMs, original equipment manufacturers.
Right.
Flex will even run on some old Macs, including some 10-year-old MacBooks.
That's true. I've done it.
You can drag those out of the closet and start using them again. The support of old hardware is the big selling point of Chrome OS Flex, as no one has to ditch existing hardware to get the latest modern operating system. More than 400 devices are certified to work, and installation is as easy as using a USB drive to install Chrome OS Flex. Google is pitching Chrome OS Flex at businesses and schools that want to modernize and simplify their IT setup or improve security and manageability. It's even good for businesses focused on sustainability, allowing some organizations to reduce e-waste and energy consumption. It's also great for old individuals with old hardware. Not old individuals with hardware.
Well, both.
Both.
I mean,
look at me.
We're not going to, they won't get turned away.
Yeah, I was just saying.
Right.
Why not?
But the biggest draw will probably be Chrome OS Flex as an answer to the growing ransomware threat, particularly for businesses that have been hit and are open to switching away from Windows. Chrome OS is far more locked down than Windows and makes it more difficult for hackers to attack. Notice I didn't say impossible. We just haven't seen one yet.
More difficult.
Right. Never say never.
Right. Chromebooks have certainly shown the world that there is a strong alternative to Windows, particularly for education, where it has thrived thanks to Chromebooks. Chrome OS Flex is yet another choice for those who want to move away from Windows. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Is Chrome OS Flex now available for old PCs and Macs? And your choices are, I'm already using it, I'm ready to give it a try, I'll take a look, what, and give up Windows 8? Meh. And, of course, other. So far, we have 25 votes in the poll. Meh is almost half of them. Followed by, I'm ready to give it a try. I'm apparently the only one already using it.
I would vote I'll take a look. It's the type of thing that if you've got an old machine, especially if it's an old desktop where you don't have to worry about batteries that just aren't holding a charge anymore, this can be a really good way to put a device in front of somebody who could be less computer literate and still allow them to get to their bank on a secure web browser, get to all the other information on the web that they might want to look up or be a part of, get to their webmail, really allow them to be an internet citizen when they might not have had the inclination or capability of doing it otherwise.
Well, the right. other bigger factor that's, you know, hitting us all is chips. The, you know, new systems out there, they're just not readily available. I mean, you know,
yeah, lead computers, times are huge.
Yeah, I mean, you wait for some stuff, you know, months. I was looking at an amplifier that I was thinking of getting.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, it was saying, okay, it'll be ready in August. Yesterday, I went and checked again. Now they're saying February of next year if I want to maybe see it.
Well, right. We're seeing that all over the place with networking equipment. We're hearing
cars.
August of 2023 is when they say, you can have it.
Yeah,
I went to buy another Raspberry Pi 4.
Yes.
They don't even give you a date anymore.
Oh, really? What about the 400s? Are they still?
I didn't look.
I got one of those. I got a 400 for $99.
Yeah.
A while back.
Yeah.
I love it.
Anyway, if you have more you'd like to say about this, you can join us if you said other, or if you just have more to say, you can join us in the forum.
Mm-hmm.
It's soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 16 July 22. Chrome OS Flex is now available for old PCs and Macs. And in there, I have also put a link to Google's list of the 400. I wasn't going to type the whole 400 in.
Slacker.
Or even cut and paste them.
Lazy.
Slacker.
Slacker. Gee whiz.
But I posted a link to the...
I think he's working or something.
Well, but the other thing is they keep adding stuff.
That's true.
So I'll just send you to the source.
But
there's a link to the list of 400 things. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And that's just another, you know, like we've preached to folks, you know, try Linux. Well, this is just another operating system that looks a lot like Windows that you can now take that old equipment that's maybe sitting down in the basement or shoved over in a closet because, it was old and slow, and put this on it and revive it and have a lot of fun with it. And their biggest point is won't say that it can't get hacked,
right?
But less likely.
Right.
And you can get online, do your banking and everything else, and it's going to be secure.
I have a friend who is very, very old and had great fun in the 60s. So he's not good at technology or remembering what he had for breakfast.
Yeah.
But I've put together an old machine with Flex on it. And it's essentially, like we said, it's basically the Chrome OS. It's a Chromebox.
Right.
Yeah. Chromebook now.
Yeah.
I leave it plugged in because the battery's dead. I just pull the battery out, leave it plugged in. It's fine. When he opens it up, there is one icon, and it takes him to his mail.
Okay.
So he can talk to his grandkids on email.
It's hard to click the wrong one when you've only got one.
When he's only got one, and he loves it. He opens it up. Most of the time, he doesn't bother to even close it. He just leaves his email open, and he can send stuff to his kids.
Simplicity, and that's what they want. You know, a lot of folks don't need all these bells and whistles, and that's why we've turned a lot of folks to Chromebooks because, you know, they'll say, well, I'm thinking of getting a new Chromebook. What do you do with it? Well, I surf the internet, I do a little banking, and I check my email. Chromebook.
Right.
Right.
You know,
keep it simple.
But equally, though, you can do an awful lot.
Oh.
I've written books.
Yeah.
On my Chromebook.
My kids are editing video.
Yeah.
Through some of the audio tools.
You can do both.
Sure.
Any of the apps that you have now on your phone, you can find for your Chromebook.
Chromebooks run Android, and they run the Chrome browser apps.
Right.
Yep.
So You can do pretty much anything you want to do, and it's quite
it's
amazing,
for,
quite
yeah,
frankly.
Now, no excuse not to try it out.
Is Flex the reincarnation of the Neverwhere product?
Yes.
Okay.
There used to be a product called...
Neverwhere?
That was the company.
That was the company name.
I don't remember the product.
Product was...
It'll come to us later.
Something else. And they sold to Google. They were kind of Chrome OS.
Yeah.
Except they were missing a couple of key features, like the Play Store.
Right.
And Google bought them and added the Play Store.
Okay.
So, you know, now I don't think they do Linux yet, but they do the Play Store.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember if they do Android. I haven't played enough with that. But they certainly do the other stuff, and that makes it quite convenient, quite easy, very, very, very much a regular Chromebook. And like I said, I know people who use nothing but Chromebooks, and they're quite happy with them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my students would have a giant desktop in their dorm room to do gaming, but they would use a Chromebook, take it to class, take notes, write their papers, surf the web, do
email.
It's all
up on the cloud.
It's all up in the cloud, and they don't have to worry about it, and they don't have to screw around with their gaming rig,
right?
And they can do it anywhere, and you know it's very convenient, very easy, and Chromebooks are inexpensive. And now, if you've got a laptop sitting in the client or a desktop sitting in the closet, unused, why not drag it out and throw Chrome Flex on it?
Because unlike Linux and Unix and the other products that you've heard us talk about, where you've got to open up things and seems like you got to do a lot more steps, which is true. You do. The Chrome, it's just install it, boom, it pops up, and just like a regular Chromebook, and it's there.
Yeah, it really turns your equipment into an appliance.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
like a blender or a mixer, you know, anything you have.
Like we used to say, it's automatically done for you. That just like on a Chromebook, you know, if you mess things up in that, you can do a power wash, and it resets it back to the day it was done. And the biggest selling factor I always tell folks is you don't worry about spyware, malware, or viruses.
Right.
There's nowhere for them to get in.
Yeah.
Right.
There's nowhere.
Now, that's not to say that you can't install toolbars.
Yeah.
Which are a horrible thing. But that's your decision. You want to do something dumb like that? Do it. That's your thing.
Go for it. Yeah.
But you're right in that, you know, you can't just get a virus off the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way.
Like I said, I still remember that one Saturday. We're sitting here. You had your Chromebook, and all of a sudden, you go, oh, look. And you turn the screen around, and it said, your Windows machine is infected.
Yep.
Oh,
big
no.
Red screen.
And it's like, okay.
Call this number.
Right.
On a Chromebook.
Animated pictures of the police lights spinning around.
Yeah, it's hilarious, you know? And it's like, but the thing of it is, though, there are folks that will fall for that.
That's
sure.
Right.
And sadly, you know, like I say, if my biggest thing to folks, whether it's emails or they're at a website and all of a sudden it pops up into this one screen, the safest thing I think to do, and this is just me personally, is if you have to think about it for more than 2 seconds.
Yeah, if something feels hinky.
Shut the machine off.
Yeah.
Shut it down. Don't try to click on things in it. Shut it down. Let it do set for a few seconds, and then bring it back up. And I'll guarantee you 90% of the times it goes away.
Yep.
Those emails, if you, again, have to think about opening them because you don't know what they are, delete it. If it's that important, somebody will contact you again. Because remember, there's still this thing called the telephone.
What now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I saw that movie with Don Ameche.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep. And they can pick it up and actually do something that very few folks do on one of those devices now. Talk.
What?
Yeah.
Right. They still got that?
Yeah.
Huh.
You don't have to sit there and play with a keyboard. You can actually use your voice and vocal cords and say hello.
Amazing.
Yeah, right. It is.
You still have that.
All right, so, we're gonna try this again and see if it crashes again.
Right, drum roll. This is incredible.
Nick is trying to set it up so that you folks can see us live
this
here
is
in
great
the studio.
Radio. Yeah. We have to narrate.
Because
yeah.
like we said, Steve Ray is down with us this week. Dennis has graced us with his presence
Nick
to fill
the
in.
Keyboard.
And
his brow
is
not working.
His
okay.
brow is furrowed as he
well, we try.
Strokes his finger across the trackpad. We'll okay. be like golf commentators.
Oh, I do have to thank you, though, Nick. Remember, that I was telling you on my Raspberry Pi 400.
Yeah.
I was setting up Linux.
Okay.
Or Xubuntu. And I was having trouble with MySQL.
Right.
Well, I went to that MariaDB.
Yes.
Which right.
is an open source drop-in replacement.
I told you.
That, I installed it, did the updates, shut her down, restarted, and then this logging program that I've been beating my butt trying to get to work.
Okay.
Boom.
Finally saw the database and said, okay, here we go.
Let me create the database, and it tied right into my radio. And as I'm spinning the dial on the radio, the you know for the frequencies, it's changing. I click on somebody, boom, all of a sudden their information pops in, and it's like, yes, it's finally working. So I'm getting that much closer on three of my machines upstairs.
Yeah.
Ditching Windows.
Hmm. Well, that sounds like a admirable project.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. I'm doing it on this Raspberry Pi 400.
Right.
So even if I muck it up, no big deal. I just wipe it out and start fresh. I got a backup.
And you're going to save a fortune on electricity.
Yep.
All right, Nick. How are things looking?
Well,
pan back over to Nick here.
Almost a little bit better right now.
Both eyebrows are up because... He thinks he may have gotten to the place he needs to be.
I may have. I'm not sure what I'm going to be seeing here at the in a moment. But
it was Andy saying cloud ready.
Yes, cloud ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Cloud ready. That was it.
Thank you very much. Yes, this is okay. the listener participation part of the show. Where you can call in and tell us about what happened this week that was wonderful or got your goat and made you grumpy. Oh, hang on.
Turn on my mic again.
You have to talk into the mic.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got to turn it on.
There you go.
Well, I turned it off because it's too hard trying to answer the phone and all that.
Oh, look, they put the whole link right in there for me.
Oh.
Oh.
That's so thoughtful.
It is thoughtful. I have sent you.
All right. I'm sorry. Dave had something he wanted to say.
No. The other cool tool that I...
I like cool tools. What do you got?
We were talking about it before that it's sort of there, but it isn't. As far as a mouse highlighter, I always, okay. you know, because I'm going between screens.
Yes.
It's
easy to lose where the pointer is.
Yeah, you lose where it is. Well, there's, I did a search on this YouTube, and there's this one gentleman, young kid, and he talks about this auto key.
Okay.
That you can install the program.
I've heard of this.
And then you go... you follow his link, and down below, this doctor has created this script. And all you do is run the script.
Okay.
And down the toolbar, down the lower right-hand corner, it looks like a little round circle arrow with a cursor in it. And if you right-click on it, you can then have it highlighted. So you can have a circle... And you can control the size of the circle. You can have it very small.
Okay.
Or you can make it very big.
So it puts a big halo around the pointer?
Yeah. And you can change, like I say, the colors of it. Also, when you go to grab something and then you go to, say, resize it, it also stays there for resizing it with the colors.
Nice.
Oh, one other tool that I added... What's this pen? It looks like a fountain pen, like you're writing.
Okay.
So if you're trying to describe things, you're going in a document and you're circling things.
Sure.
You can turn it into a pen and circle around and highlight the different things. And it's like, wow, this is cool. And then all you do is go back to there and you can turn it off. So you can turn it on and off as need be.
Amazing. Nice.
Yeah, it's a real cool utility. I mean, he was showing, it was a two-part video. The first part, he was showing how, you know, you can download a lot of them and bury it into the cursor and select it. But it's usually just for that one.
Right.
So it's your arrow. And now, you know, going around multiple screens I lose the white cursor quite often.
Sure.
Or even if it's dark. Whereas if there's a nice little halo around,
it's easier to find.
These eyes are
Every little bit helps, right?
Yeah. At my age, yeah.
I do that on my Chromebooks right now.
Well, that's why I say accessibility is really the new killer app.
Yeah.
In the olden days of the 1970s and 80s, the concept of the killer app was you bought the machine so that you could do this,
mm-hmm.
right? It was like you'd buy a drill and a drill bit because you need a hole,
yep.
right? And this machine makes holes and I need holes, so this is the killer app for holes.
Yeah.
But with a computer in the early Mac days, it was desktop publishing. You know, you could lay out an entire magazine or a newsletter entirely on your computer and then mm-hmm. send it to your laser printer and get really professional quality output. And my opinion is that accessibility, the ease, pardon me, with which you can use equipment and maneuver with it, and even when you have different abilities than others, whether that's due to age or something else,
mm-hmm.
that is really what makes a device worth having these days.
Yeah, definitely. That's, well, because everything, you know, we want it quicker, you know, we want everything faster.
Right.
You know, it's instant gratification, you know, and if that was 5 minutes ago, well, what are you doing now?
Right. Well, you know, technology has spread, right? So in the last 20 years, with the advent of cellular networks, ubiquitous broadband, relatively inexpensive computing for mm-hmm. the vast majority of people, the playing field has gotten pretty saturated. So, you know, the number of people you know with a cell phone is very high. The number of people with a smartphone is very high. So there aren't a lot of unique features anymore that make people want to go and invest in technology. But with technology that can help you achieve what you're hoping to, even right. if your abilities are different, I really think that's where the next frontier is for technology right
well,
now, especially
Nick,
consumer tech.
Nick and I were talking about it last week. It's like, you know, he had it happen to him, and I've done it to me. I had phone lines fall.
Okay.
And my connected to the house, and it's like, oh, I don't use it anymore.
Yeah.
Just trim them off. You know,
big deal.
It's something that's gone by the wayside. Nobody, you know, for the most part nowadays,
it's uncommon,
has a house phone. It's just another added expense because you've got this other device that's right in your pocket.
Well, I don't want to go find the phone on the wall when I can just pick the one out of my pocket.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Sometimes it's easier to find that one, though.
Well, there's that, yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Venright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You, because it is your support that lets us be truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
It's fantastic. It's so good to be here.
It is so good to be here. And I'm going to read the news.
Wait.
Oh, no, I guess I'm not.
But I'm backstage. You need to click on me so that I can join the StreamYard stream.
Oh, there you are. Yes, indeed.
I'm waving at you from the wings.
I see that.
Hello.
Okay.
Ta-da.
Ta-da. All right. We now have, we are now up on StreamYard.
Believe it.
So if you go to StreamYard and look for Soundbites.
We should be there.
Theoretically, you'll find us, I think.
We're shrugging. It's technology. What can we tell you?
Yeah, right.
If it doesn't work, we'll find some radio show to call in and we'll ask them about it.
Exactly right.
Does anybody know any other call-in radio shows?
Well, I'm not taking any calls for you guys.
First, before we can,
all right, I'm on it.
Before we can do that, it goes in here.
Take it.
Okay. In the meantime, we will start. Yeah, we're working on it. We'll get there. I promise you. Oh, you need more slack? Hold on. I'm just moving this over a little bit. We're going to talk to Walter from Greece, New York. Hi, Walter. What's up?
Hi there, gentlemen. Spoke to you last week, Nick, about my 32-bit Dell machine about the different Linuxes to use.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, now that you're talking about the Chrome Flex, I'm wondering, have they tried it out on 32-bit machines?
Good question.
This I do not know, but here's where you get lucky.
Okay.
You can head over to soundbites.org.
Yeah.
Go into the forums. Right, scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums.
Uh-huh.
Second forum down is the poll discussion.
Right.
As I said, currently at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 16 July 22. Chrome OS Flex is now available for old PCs and Macs. And in there, I give a link to the Google page with the list of all of the checked out
devices.
Systems.
Yep. Verified.
So you can go down to the Dell section, find your Dell, and see if it's listed.
Okay. Now, that just makes me wonder if it does work because, well, I've had the 32-bit machine, but I can't use the Chrome web browser because they've dropped 32-bit support, correct?
I do not know if that is equally true of Chrome OS Flex.
Yeah, because, you see, I have a Chromebook tablet. And I look at the Chrome, you know, to update the operating system, it says 32-bit. So it's like, okay, maybe they've transformed it or it's going to go fit on the 32-bit machine.
Hmm. I'll have to look into that. Hmm. I'm Googling as we speak here to see what I can learn.
Right. I don't honestly know.
Yeah. Because the part that I like, though, is that, well, I don't like Chrome web browser.
Okay.
I mean, so I've been using Firefox. I mean, it's better for me. So you're saying that if they come along and put the Play Store on there, that'd be great because I should be able to put down Firefox down like I have on my tablet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Then, too, because of the USB ports, I should be able to go ahead and just get my documents, just plug it in and out using the Google Documents. And then they're not having to go ahead and really put it up on the sky. I'm a little paranoid, so I'm going to admit that I'd like to keep it on other secure sites when I do my backups.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So there's a chance then that the Dell will work, and maybe it does work on 32-bit machines.
Just remember, though, you know, if you are going to back it up to another device, back it up to a few different devices.
I have four devices.
Good.
Plus a out there at box.com. I change things and I send it up into there. It doesn't
Good.
Sync, but I make a folder and I set it up to there. The folder is updated and then I send it up to Box.
There you go.
Okay. I like the sound of that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much. I'll be happy to hear if you find anything else and I'll take an exploration on your website to find out about my machine. Thank you.
And,
excellent.
Well,
thanks.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know, if any other listeners have ideas about machines that they'd like to try, you know, we could even offer to look things up for them, or we could have them call in and tell us about something they found that was surprising that they didn't expect.
Right. I've got it running on a Toshiba satellite.
Yeah.
And the only weird thing is, if it works with. Everything works.
Is this the mouse thing?
This is the mouse thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If I try to touch the trackpad, try to move the mouse, before it finishes booting,
right?
I have no mouse.
Okay.
And I cannot get a mouse.
So you got to do hands off.
Right.
While it's booting.
Hands off while it's booting. Once the desktop is up, then if I move the mouse, everything is fine.
So it's got to load that driver.
It's just this weird little
thing. Smells like a driver.
But you know what? As long as I'm not impatient, and the thing boots up in like 15 seconds, it's not quite as fast as that. Yeah, right. It's not quite as fast as a real Chromebook. Chromebooks use SSDs.
Yes.
And of course, this is an old 5400 RPM drive, so it takes actually more like 30, 40
seconds more.
Yeah. But as long as I'm patient for less than a minute,
can you be?
Sometimes
at your age,
when I remember to be, maybe I need to put a sticker on the trackpad that
That's
says
right.
"not yet."
No, no touchy.
But yeah, so like I said, it works great. The one thing I don't have access to anymore, of course, is old computers. You probably do.
Oh yes.
So you,
how many would you like?
I'll take one or two. I will.
We'll talk.
That's not
we'll
a joke. Because I'd like to play with this on them and
oh,
see
I got one
works.
For
how about
you.
Servers?
Though.
Need any servers?
Always.
Okay, we'll talk.
Rack mounted or?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I got an all-in-one.
All-in-one, but your hands are so far apart.
With touch screen.
Oh, that is nice. One,
yeah. That's HP right. has.
I'll
some
play
of those.
With that. I absolutely will play with that.
I'll bring it next week.
I'll play with that. See what we get.
I just don't have room.
There was right. there was a point in my life
mm-hmm.
about a year ago when I had about 15 or 20 laptops.
Yeah.
That people had given me, and I refurbished them. I fixed the ones I could. Got a at that point Linux on them, and then you know gave them out to. Individuals or retirement yeah. homes like that.
Folks that can use them.
Now I would be happy, very happy, to do the same thing with old laptops by turning them into Chromebooks.
Sure.
Which would be easier for everybody.
I'll
really.
Bring this one in for you. Because one thing that I collected, and I had a nice stack of them, which I'm finding great with my Raspberry Pi 400, is the small laptop hard drives.
Sure.
Because oh, yeah. you don't need a lot of space, you know, and it's not built for speed. It's only a four gig machine.
Right.
So
right.
It's nice. I can sit there. All right. Well, I got this part working. I'll set that one aside. I hook up another one.
Different project.
Start another different project. I had to put labels. This labels.
Yeah.
All the machines that I couldn't fix, I took the hard drives out and did that. Reformatted yeah. them. I've got a couple of gig drives, a couple of half gig drives, and one, I think it's 20 meg drive.
Sure.
That I'm probably never, ever going to use or give to anybody
I think
for anything.
You should gut it, put a little hinge on it, and then turn it into a business card holder.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
Something like that.
One thing I did notice,
that,
though,
for sure.
on my 400 is I have an SSD drive.
Yeah.
And then once in a while, you know, I'm hooking it up to these old slower drives.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, even on this Raspberry Pi 400, which is only 4 gig, it's like, wow, what a difference in accessing stuff and loading it. Because I have the Pi set up so it automatically boots from a USB device. I don't go off the card.
Right, me too.
So it's like...
Yeah.
Solar ones compared to the SSD drive. It's
well,
like,
the 400 has a 3.0 port. And if you've got a 3.0 yeah. drive, it's pretty quick.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But I have on my 4, I have a terabyte drive. Terabyte spinning hard drive.
Sure.
I don't care.
Nope.
I'm using it to serve audio and video. I'm using it to do backups, both from the web and from my local machine.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it doesn't have to be all that fast.
Right.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it takes an extra quarter of a second to save my database.
Oh, well,
I don't care.
I've got two Pis. One is a Pi 3.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a 3B and it is running, Octoprint. So it talks to my 3D printer and it gives me a lot more control. It builds in a little website where you can upload the STL files, the model files, and it after you've sliced them, and it will happily keep them in a little list, and you can pick the one you want and say print, and then it will go talk to the printer and say, okay, start time to warm up. Go print this, please.
Yeah. And what printer do you have?
I have a Monoprice Delta Mini.
Well, those are nice.
Which is a little one. I don't know how big to describe it as. About this big as like 2 big gallon paint cans, one on top of the other. And it has a build volume that's roughly the size of a big coffee mug. It's not huge,
but for
hobby things, it's great. And it's also very portable. It's got a handle on top, so you can drag it around
wherever
you want. So plus Octoprint makes a fun little setup that is very portable. I don't waste a lot of time trying to configure and set everything up. It just I pick something, it prints, and I get on with life.
I'll tell you what I have. I have an Ender 3 clone.
Okay.
So about 8.5 by 8.5 by 8.5.
Yeah, that's what I'm. I think that'll be my next step.
I tell you what, I couldn't love it more.
It's
except
fun.
Now I'm just a print monkey for my wife.
Yeah.
Oh, I need this for market. Oh, I need that for market. Oh, I need this other thing for market.
Yes. She's got her magic wand, and she just points it in your direction.
It's exactly how it works. Okay, I need a thing that's kind of like this. No. I don't do kind of like.
Yeah.
You got to tell me exactly what you want.
Go to Thingiverse and send me the link.
or just tell me what you want, and I'll build it. I use Tinkercad.
Yes.
And I can build it. That's not a problem. I just can't do... It should sort of be something like, no. Mm-hmm. No, we got to sit down and figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, show me a picture of
it. 3D printers don't do sort of.
Right. Then the worst part is, you know that thing you printed last week? Yeah, this is yesterday, right? Okay. She's at market right now. And so she's theoretically at least not listening. You know that thing you printed for me last week? Yes. I need another one for tomorrow. Okay.
Okay, well, how long does it take to print?
I mean, it's not that hard, but it's a 5.5 hour print.
Right.
It was already 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
3D printers are not fast.
They're not fast. They are very good, but they're not fast. So I just said, okay, honey, what color?
Yes, that's right, because you've got the library of colors, right?
I've got a library of colors.
You've got the big Crayola box of filament.
Remind me at the break to show you my database and web program that I've written.
Oh my goodness.
For all of
to
that.
Keep track of this.
To keep track of everything. When I create a thing,
right.
I put it in the database, you know how many
meters
it took and the weight and everything else.
All right.
And then it deducts that from the size of the spool so I know how much I got left.
Very clever.
Keeps track and I can duplicate it. So when she said make the second one, I just said what color? I said duplicate this print. This is the color.
Right.
Done.
Poof.
Poof.
Hmm.
I can you know, put brims and skirts and stuff, and I can say whether it failed or didn't fail. I've had a few that failed.
Oh, yes. You've had the messy bird's nest of spaghetti?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's never fun to
that's
come
an
down.
An offering to the spaghetti monster.
Whatever it takes.
Is what that is.
Whatever it takes. We'll take all the karma we can get.
Exactly.
The other pie I have is running a product called Pie Hole.
Oh,
which is a hilarious name, but it's a device that keeps track of the websites that we go to, and if those websites make calls out to advertising servers, it prevents my browser from showing those ads. So it blocks those. It can also block tracking cookies and other things, but it can also speed up my web surfing because it keeps a copy of the information it finds out locally, so my computer doesn't have to wait for the rest of the internet to provide it.
This is something not a lot of sites really use enough, and they should. Your browser can say, hey, Soundbites, I was here on July 15th.
Right.
Has anything changed since then?
Yep.
And my site would come back and say no. And so it would just show the one it's got in memory. It's saved.
It's cached.
It's cached.
Yeah.
If it has changed, then it loads it. And that asking takes almost no time at all. So it's an imperceptible change. Now, on a site like Soundbites, it changes all the time.
That's true.
I get that. But generally speaking, it doesn't. And you can often go to a site much faster because it doesn't have to load anything over the internet.
Right.
Because it's got it all in cache.
As an ad blocker, it's really sped things up.
Yeah.
And you can set this up so that your phone works with it while it's in your house or your laptops or your tablets. It's a great way to keep lots of ads from showing up. There are websites you go to where you get the website, but then your computer has to make all these calls out to where all the ads come from. And then they finally get the information, and suddenly they throw it into the layout of the website, and you can tell because the content that you were trying to read the first three lines of jumped 2 inches down, and you have to realign your eyes and go figure out where it went.
Yep.
Or if you've got a bunch of different ads, sometimes they're all the same ad. They just show up in multiple places on the left column, on the right column, halfway in between the story that you're reading, in between paragraphs.
Yep.
This can help prevent that. So those are what the little credit card size computers are doing in my basement. They live next to my Synology storage device, and they sit there very happily and do what they're asked.
Yep, just keep going and going and going.
No fans. No, they use a trickle of electricity, and they're just a joy to have around.
Three of my news fans.
They're little
fours.
They're little cute pets. Little
the fours.
The fours use fans. The
yeah,
threes,
fours.
Don't.
I got. I've got three fours, and they all use fans. I've okay. got a Pi Zero that doesn't.
I've yeah. got a. I've got a Pi 3B plus, I think, that's running Motion. So it's got a camera on it, so I can see who's at my front door.
Okay.
And it sits in a window, and even in the depths of summer in a room with no air conditioning, it barely gets above
blasted.
65
yeah.
degrees.
Celsius, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's pretty clever. I've just heard that the newest Pi Zeros will now have Wi-Fi.
Yes,
yeah. Little ones
Pi
that are
Zero
like
a, W.
Zero mm-hmm. W, yeah. And
I'm
they're about the size
a
of a stick of gum.
That has a hat. And the ones I've got, I should get a hat and just have you solder it.
Yeah, I can do that.
I know.
Because I've got the I've before Goldcrest went out of business.
Oh, I missed them.
Yeah, you know, because on the main board there's
pins, holes, where, the holes
yeah,
for the pins,
the holes for the pins. I've got the pins.
The little
you just
pin?
Yeah, you just break them off as how many you need, whether you need six or four. In most cases, it's just the four. You set them in there, quick solder them, and. You know, it's easy, but he made me a deal on it because they were, you know, closing.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, strips of them. And I was doing them for a few of us were doing it for a project. And he goes, give me a buck. So,
sold.
Yeah. So
I've got my daughter for Christmas. It's so long I haven't been able to buy a pie.
Yeah. It's been months.
Gave me a little screen.
Oh,
little,
yeah.
Is it
e-ink? Yeah.
E-ink. Little e-ink screen, and I'd love to play with it.
Nexus? The one of the Nexus ones?
No, this is Nexton? A different company. It's called Pi Hat, something.
Okay.
But it's just a little thing, and you connect it to a Raspberry Pi Zero, and you can, you know, put whatever you want on it.
Right.
I can't play with it because I don't have a Raspberry. Well, first, I don't have a Raspberry Pi Zero. But I secondly don't have a Raspberry Pi Zero with the hat.
Yeah, right.
The stuff. So and it's a full thing across. It's all the pins. I don't know which ones are absolutely necessary.
What do you want to do with the e-ink display? Just statistics? Or?
Well, once you get it done, it's e-ink, so it doesn't require electricity to run.
Maintain state.
So I could
right.
do, you know, I could say, hi, my name is Nick, and stick it on my shirt if I want to.
Fair, good point. Okay.
Right? I mean, you can do anything with it.
I hadn't thought about that.
The next, I've got on my Pi Zero, I built a little case for it. And I've got a good size screen. I think it's like 3x5.
Yeah.
And with the Nexton screens, they wind up, you can get the code. And what it does is it's a hotspot.
Okay.
So people are on talking because I've set up this hotspot for DMR radio. And you can see this program that it's running are the people calling. And you can see the past 10 calls and the current call.
Okay.
And it just displays that. And it's constantly changing.
Sure.
And seeing the calls. So if you want to go back to that one person, you missed it. Oh, he's right there on that list. You can quick go back and call to him and that.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was simple to build, you know, and like you say, yeah, you get one, I can solder it up for you, no problem.
Thanks.
Do that.
Yeah, we'll see. It's the things you can do, it's easier to say what you can't do with a Raspberry Pi, quite frankly. You're probably not going to run your car on it.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong about that, actually, now that I think of that. You're probably not going to run an entire nuclear reactor on one of them. Let's just say that much.
It probably is against the EULA, yeah.
It probably is, yeah.
But, you're not allowed to run nuclear power plants. let's see. You're not allowed anything that is involved in life support systems or air traffic control. I think that's.
I think you're about right.
Those are usually the big three in the EULA.
Although I'll bet you they use them in life support systems.
They probably.
I bet they do because they're tiny little boxes and they take very little electricity.
Mm-hmm.
I know that a lot of people use them as displays.
Mm-hmm.
The back end for a display.
Yeah, you just 5 volts.
Stick them on the back of a monitor.
Yes,
and
then
you're
now you've
done.
Got electronic signage.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's a very common use.
Right.
Yeah, and they don't get hot, you know, and they just run forever.
Right. That's exactly right. And we've used them for that. And then, of course, now it's just an electronic thing on the back of the monitor,
mm-hmm.
so you can SSH into it or run a web server on it.
Yeah.
So you can go into that web server and say, you know, show these pictures, or I'm changing the text, or whatever
right.
you're doing. It's ludicrously easy. And like I said, I use one to broadcast the picture from my front door. So I can, you know, if the doorbell rings, I can look at my phone or I can look at my computer.
Right. No, it's a very inexpensive tool for hobbyists to
play around with. And
yeah, to scratch their own itch, you know?
Right. And motion lets you, it'll even do an alarm thing. Oh, I've detected motion. That's a problem at my house because we've got bushes and trees and the wind.
Oh,
so I had to turn that off.
Right.
Yeah, but that's the other big problem, though, is like you stated back a while ago, is just acquiring them.
Yeah.
You know, right. getting these little devices, even though, yeah, there's not many chips on it, you know, and diodes and resistors, getting the main chips is definitely a big issue. And it's very difficult to get a four. I mean, forget it.
Yeah.
You have to check, yeah, secondary markets, Craigslist, eBay.
Oh, yeah. And then they're gouging. They're gouging
well,
big time.
Supply and demand.
Yep. Yeah. It looks like Canakit has the 400s.
Okay.
But I don't see
what's
them.
What are they asking for those right now?
$100.
Okay. And they're in stock?
Yep.
Seem to be the 400s yeah. at Canakit.
Right.
Yeah.
How's the keyboard on those?
I love it.
Great.
Pretty good? Okay.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That music tells us we are done with the first hour, but do not go away. We're going to have a whole lot more of Dave Enright, not nearly enough of Dennis Worster, who was kind enough to take time off from his incredibly busy life to join us for a couple of hours while Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. You'll have way too much of Nick Francesco, and we'll have more of you. So you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back on the other side of this break with a whole lot more sound bites. It's 59 minutes after the hour. Take a quick bio break, but don't forget to come back. This is member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Oh, look at that. I can actually put stuff on the thing. We did have a caller, a typer.
About Revo?
Yeah. In StreamYard, who asked about
Revo
uninstaller.
Yeah.
And
I've heard that's a really good one for pulling files, I'm sorry, for pulling applications and all of their associated files off of your PCs.
Right, right. And, I said, if I hit hide, it goes away again. Oh, that's very clever. So basically the question was, does the average user really need Revo? I'd like to think I'm an average user. I don't install and uninstall software. Well, Revo is specifically designed for installing and uninstalling software. So if you never, ever add or remove anything, then, yeah, you probably don't need it. But there's a lot of stuff that you might not want on your machine, particularly if it's a Windows 10
mm-hmm.
Machine or 11, I suppose. Lots of bloatware comes on it. You might want to get rid of that. But for people who don't test a lot of software, add a lot of software, they only use what came on the computer, do most everything on the web or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, you basically you're just using your Windows PC as a Chromebook, but you paid more for it.
But yeah, I wouldn't sweat.
Then I wouldn't worry about Revo uninstaller.
It's
a helpful tool.
Yeah, it's a helpful tool. You can get the free version. It doesn't cost you a penny.
That's true.
You can certainly try it
out. Or you can then get the paid version, which does a lot more, depending, again, like Nick was saying, though, based upon your needs. If you're the type of person putting stuff on and off and updating stuff, and they tell you, all right, yeah, if you're going to update, you know, put a fresh copy on. So go in and uninstall it. And Revo, as far as getting off that bloatware,
right?
You can sit there with a new version and select a bunch of them.
Okay.
You can select as many programs as you want and say, yep, just uninstall them all.
Yep. Now, the caveat there, of course, is you pay attention to what you're uninstalling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a loaded gun, and you could shoot yourself in the foot pretty easily. So be very careful what you uninstall.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we go to the phones, let me remind you, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415, just like Jim did. From Rochester, New York. What's up, Jim?
Oh, hello. I received, when I booted up my Dell laptop this morning, first time ever, I received a little box that said audio software. Please note a computer restart is needed to complete audio software installation. What is that?
The audio software is the software that runs your sound card. So the thing that lets you hear stuff, and if you have a microphone, it's the thing that grabs that sound you're speaking and sends it through the computer. So when you do an update, generally speaking, you have audio software that might get updated, and if it did, and it might need to restart your computer because it needs to hook itself into the operating system. So that
I had never seen a box like that before.
Well, you won't see it very often because audio software doesn't update very often.
Oh, okay. So that's legitimate.
That sounds legitimate to me, yeah.
Okay. So when I close it down tonight and reopen tomorrow morning, is that the same as a reboot? Or
yes.
Do I need it is?
If you actually turn the machine off.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Also, on the Revo, I am going to put that in and check it. I have Windows 10 and go through and see if there's, you mentioned bloatware. Is that recognizable?
Well, it's programs that nobody really uses, like Candy Crush.
Oh, okay.
And that stuff. I don't, you know, if I were running Windows, I would install Revo on installer and remove all of those kinds of programs that
games
I just don't care about.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I should be able to detect those then.
Yeah, you should. Remember, if you don't know what it is, don't delete it.
No. All right. I'm very cautious.
Good.
Well, thank you very much. Your show is excellent every time.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate that.
That's not so nice to hear.
Yeah. Like I said, Revo Uninstaller is a loaded gun with a hair trigger. So be a little cautious.
Yes, don't look down the barrel.
Right, don't look down the barrel.
Well, one thing I will say in defense of it, every time, you know, you go to uninstall stuff, it automatically makes a backup before you uninstall it.
It sounds like it's actually well thought out.
Oh, yeah, because if you do I didn't mean to do that one, you can get it back.
You can, yeah, you can.
But again, you really kind of need to know what it is you're doing. So if you don't recognize something, you know, it's obvious that Candy Crush is Candy Crush. It's a game.
Okay, yep. What you need.
And if you don't need that, then you don't need that. But if you see a program whose name you don't know and don't understand, then I'm afraid you really shouldn't be deleting it. We've seen people delete their entire operating system. Yep. We've seen them delete drivers. It's really a problem. So you really need to be careful with programs like that. Know what it is you're actually deleting and why. And then that's the only time you should delete it.
Yeah. For the new users and everything, do one program at a time.
Right.
just one program at a time and make sure, like Nick says, you know, like say Candy Crush, you select that and you know you're uninstalling it. Don't try to do bunches of them and everything else. And I don't even know if the unpaid version even offers that.
Okay. Well, we can certainly look into that.
Yeah, I'd have to look into it because I just, again, which we've said, you know, for decades, that if I find a product and I use it a lot,
right,
just like Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, AVG, and Revo Uninstaller, I use them, I like them, I've been using them for years, I pay for them.
Sure.
I support the people that write this stuff because then, you know what? Oh, they keep updating.
Right. They'll still be there next time you need something.
And and I find that so helpful for, if I need support, like one of those different programs that I used, and I found it very useful. And it's out there for free, and it's a logging program. But I figured, oh, heck, this guy put a heck of a lot of time and effort in it. I know what that's like.
Yeah.
So I sent him, a few bucks. He comes back, oh, thank you very much. Well, then I had a question about a month later.
Mm-hmm.
Bam, he got right back to me. And I was surprised. I figured, maybe I hear from him by the end of the week.
Right.
It was a few hours later. He goes, oh, yeah, here's what you want to do in that. If you got any other questions, just let me know. Okay, that's great.
Right.
But, you know.
And oftentimes, these tools are not that expensive, too.
You're not talking hundreds of bucks.
No. The tools that I look at, I see the web page, I hear about it, I go check it out, and I usually have a number in my head. Oh, geez, what's this going to be? $80, $90, $120. And I can scroll down to where the price is, and it's like, no, it's $22. Like,
well, Revo...
Okay.
I've paid more for pizza.
That's right.
Revo Uninstaller had a two-year special. And I think it was $30.
Wow.
That's $15 a year.
Right.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's like, hello. That. And constantly, if I'm running the program, once you start Revo up, it's, oh, wait a minute. We've got an update. Do you want to do this before you uninstall it? Oh, okay. Boom. You just click the update button. It shuts the program down, downloads the update,
right,
installs it, and starts it right back up. So it puts you right back to where you were. It's like,
it's very clever.
Very professional.
And if you've ever had to write software and deal with all of the exceptions and the details, $22 or $30 starts to look really cheap.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but I do not understand the attitude of people who will not pay for software.
Yeah, that's,
I mean, I get it if you can't afford to pay for software.
That's right. One thing.
That's one thing. That's different.
And that's legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But these, I know some people who absolutely would not part with a penny with a gun to their heads. Yeah. Very gun oriented this week. But
is everything okay at home, Nick?
Yeah.
You sleeping well?
Yeah, I'm
doing all right. Okay.
But I believe in pay. I had the same experience. I sent a guy some money. He wasn't asking for money.
Right.
I wrote to him and I said, I need your PayPal. I'm going to send you money because I love this program. He said, unnecessary. I said, I don't care.
Tough.
Send me your PayPal. And he did. And I paid him. And about a month later, I had a question about the product. And I wrote to him and he said, I said, I don't understand how this works. I would have thought it did this.
But instead, I got this other thing.
I got this other thing. And he wrote back to me and he said, it makes sense to me. I'm adding that function. I'm renaming this function. You were absolutely right. I wasn't paying a lot of attention. I wrote back and I said, that wasn't really necessary. I said, anything for my supporters.
Hey.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it's
and it doesn't take much to make somebody's day when you're slaving over the keyboard trying to make really a piece of intellectual art.
Right. Right.
Well, you're really supporting an intellectual artist.
Well, one thing, one other piece of software I use, and it's a big company. It's called Ham Radio Deluxe.
Okay.
And it's a software program that you download and you pay for it. They give it to you for free. You can try it out for a while, but then you got, 30-day trial. It gives you full function, but then you got to pay for it. Well, after you've got it, and the membership runs out after a year, the program still works,
Right.
But they offer, you know, renewing memberships for updates and everything else. So I've been updating it now for a few years. And they had a new version come out, and it didn't, you know, literally locked up machines.
Right.
So I got on there, created what they call a trouble ticket, and I go, I'm a little baffled. I says, you know, here you've got a new version coming down, and it's the only version you're offering for downloading. You don't give me the option to go back to the previous version that was working. And I got a guy texting me back, and he goes, yeah. You know, emailed me, you know, we didn't think about that.
Right.
But that's a very good point. So now when you go to the program to do the download, they've got the current version, but just in case it doesn't work, they now added, here's the previous working version.
Oh, yeah, the stable release.
And sent me this letter thanking me very much. It was something that was very obvious, and they didn't think about it. And I said, well, no problem. Hey,
everybody's human, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's like, so now they got it in there, and, you know, everybody, there was a lot of folks that were getting upset because they downloaded the greatest one, because they always tell you, you got to uninstall and reinstall the new one. So we did that. And then it was working, so they quick put that up there, and then boom, it saved a lot of tickets, and a lot of people were happy that they could at least go back to the previous version that was working.
Yeah, right. give them a place to go, and you know, you won't have as many angry tickets waiting for you.
Yeah,
and the support person, it's better for everybody.
It's just that extra support that, you know, you're not talking a ton of money. I think it cost me, it's like, I think it was like $25 again for, you know, a year's subscription.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But they're giving you updates, and, you know, this is just one or two. I mean, just since this is July, I think they've done like 8 different updates and enhancements to the program.
Right. Amazing.
And it's like, yeah, it's well worth the support, because if you don't pay for the support, you're stuck in the older version.
Right.
Right.
You don't get the updates.
Right.
So to me, it's well worth it.
Well worth it. I'll give you the other side of the coin, though.
Yeah.
There's a program that I use irregularly. Mm-hmm. If I boot it up twice a month, that's a lot.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
And it does some stuff. It doesn't do anything other programs don't do. It just sometimes it's more convenient to do them in that.
Right.
But I was looking in, and it's a free program, absolutely free.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what? I should see if there's a subscription. You know, I'll be
happy
to get it. So I went to look at it. The subscription is $99 a year.
Yeesh.
No, that I don't use it enough, and I don't need any of the extra features.
Right.
Now, if I were using it in a business environment, which is really what it's designed for, then absolutely it would be worth it, because I saw the things it does.
Right.
And back when I was working, I could have used every single one of those.
Right.
And $99 is cheap for what it does.
Well, yeah, and you could turn that $99 investment into more productivity.
Exactly right. And it would have been fine. But for me as a home user,
you need a different plan.
I needed a different plan. I would have happily sent them 30 or even $40, but not $99.
Right.
Well, it's just like I looked at Foxit. You know, I like Foxit for doing PDFs.
It's the PDF writer and reader.
And they wanted me to look at the Premiere version and all that, because then you could design forms.
That.
And there's a couple of forms. Yeah, it'd be nice to have a, you know, that you could set up this setting it to automatically do this and this. And I was looking at what they wanted for the full version program, so I could create forms and everything else.
Yeah.
I go over there and I'm thinking, oh, you know, if it's under $100, $195.
Yeah.
Right. No, I don't create that many forms.
Right. Well, again, if you're a business.
But that is still cheaper than what Adobe would charge you for their product. So, you know, that market is the price is
A little higher. You know, I just looked up Linux PDF editor. And there's 11 free ones.
Sure. Do those let you make the forms?
That would be a PDF writer.
Yeah, usually that's the bigger, deeper set of features and functions.
Yeah. There are some for those. So, there's all kinds of stuff out there.
But yeah, that's what I was trying to find, though, something else that I could create forms.
Right.
Because I was creating this one form, and again, I have it tabbing across, so you click on the first one, and you can quick put in a date, and it puts in the slashes.
Okay.
So you put in the, and then it grabs the time off
the clock.
Clock.
Uh-huh.
And then, boom, a drop-down menu that you could select things and fill it out as you go along, and then, boom, go to the next field.
Yeah.
And lock this thing.
Right, right.
It's like, yeah, no, I'm, for the few forms that I'll create, maybe, what, two or three a year? A
couple $100 might be a little steep for that.
Yeah, a couple $100 just to create a couple. I was like, yeah, no. So I just got to find some other, because I'm cheap that way.
Well, or find somebody else who's already got it, and they do it as a business, and maybe they'll charge you by the form.
Well, right. A lot of them, I just created spreadsheets.
Yeah,
you know, just
true.
Do a spreadsheet.
Google Sheets will let you make a form.
Yeah, and I did that up one morning because the guy was complaining. He saw this spreadsheet, and he wanted to be able to fill it out. And I go, that's not that hard looking. So I boom, 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 quick created it. It was for this one contest,
right?
13 colonies. And I quick threw it together and put it together, and boom.
Well, we've got big news at my house. I spent the money and installed a smart deadbolt on my front door.
Oh, yeah.
And I have been researching and researching and researching. I know we talked about
it on
the show.
If it's dead, how smart can it be?
Say again?
If it's dead, how smart can it be? Never mind. Go ahead.
You'll see. You'll see.
Dying to find out.
So I did a bunch of research, and there's, as you might expect, I'm kind of an Apple household. So Apple's got this set of protocols called HomeKit that let everything talk to everything else. And Apple... I'll give them grief when they earn it, but they seem to be doing a very good job at security right now.
That's good.
A new niche.
Because a lot of these home...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like Swiss cheese security-wise. So the one I chose was made by Kwikset. It was the Premise line, and it has this display on the front where it displays like a keypad. It doesn't have physical buttons. It has a touch display. So you can wipe it down if it gets dirty, or you can, it's weather resistant and all that jazz. So it's very convenient. You walk up to it, you either cover it with your palm or you touch it in three places at once, and the screen lights up. The first thing it does, which I thought was the most clever, is it shows you two numbers, and you have to tap both the numbers, and then you enter in your code, and it will unlock the door. But the two numbers that it shows you at first are randomized because then you put fingerprints on all the different places where the numbers are. So if somebody tries to take a look at where you've been typing all your numbers, trying to pick up or figure out what your
see
code
a pattern?
Is. Yeah, the fingerprints are everywhere. So they can't.
Cool.
That they're thwarted. And I said, that is such a clever way to do that and solve that problem. But it's been 100% reliable. It is unlocked and locked every time I've asked it to. It still has a keyway, so I can use my keys, even if the batteries are down.
Die.
I think it takes four AA's on the inside of the house. And I've been completely happy with it so far.
Hmm.
My kids, who I thought would be a little against it, seem to like it. It seems to work. On the inside, you still get the thumb lever, so you flip that the same way you would normally. So it doesn't get in the way of anybody who wants to treat it like a normal deadbolt, which was very high on my list of things that I wanted. But the feature that I'm looking to do that I haven't done yet is proximity unlock. So when my phone gets within a certain distance,
and automatically unlocks it,
the phone detects it as I walk in with two armloads of groceries. Yeah. It should automatically unlock.
That would be handy.
That's the part I'm looking to do next.
Nice.
So it's been a little adventure at my house, but you can also set up temporary codes. So if you've got a person coming to get your dog to take them for a walk, they can have their own code. You can have that code expire in 2 hours. You can have that code expire in a week. You can pick how long that's valid for because...
And I'm assuming there's a log somewhere.
Yes, there's an online log. There's an app as well. You can get notified. This is optional. You can get notified every time it locks and unlocks.
Nice.
And if you give a different code to each person and you assign the name It'll say, Susie unlocked the deadbolt today at 2:42 p.m. You can get lots and lots of details. But again, it's all optional. You could completely take the batteries out if you want, and it would still behave just like a typical lock. So that was the big adventure for the summertime at the Worcester household.
Nice. Cool.
Sounds
yeah.
great.
Well, it's handy. You know, that's the big thing, though, is these home security systems, more and more of them, you know, are becoming available to folks, and they're setting them up.
Yeah, the prices are coming down.
Yeah, big time.
And it's a one-time, it's not the cheapest way to go, but it is a one-time expense. There's no subscription involved.
Yeah.
Right. So. The only problem I have is a lot of people don't understand you have to pay real attention to the security.
Yes.
There are way too many cheap, unsecured systems out there.
That's true. Mm-hmm. No doubt about that. Yeah. That was the first thing that I was looking at.
And yeah, I can't get a fly-by-night
have
thing.
Have you frozen?
I think I've got to make sure my Chrome is running.
There it is.
My computer went to
now
sleep.
Now it's working. There you go.
Well, like anything else, you know, if you buy cheap, you're going to get cheap.
That's
you know,
right.
it's and the quality, you know, in the things. You know, you think, well, I paid the... That doesn't mean you're going to get the top of quality and the best, say, imagery or anything else.
Yep. Do your research.
Yeah, you got to do your homework. Like anything else we talk about, you know, when you're going to even pick out a computer, we have always told you, figure out what you need and then go from there. If graphics is a big thing, all right, then maybe you want to go with a higher-end graphics card. If you're into photos and taking thousands of those, maybe a bigger storage. You got to assess your needs and what you're going to be doing.
That's exactly right. Not enough people really pay attention to the whole idea of security.
That's true.
We need them to do a lot more of that before I'm comfortable with putting all that stuff in my house. All right. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Christine from Brighton, New York on the line. What's up, Christine?
Yes. Hi, guys.
Hello.
So I used to have Kaspersky on my laptop, and based on recommendations I've heard here, I've been to the Tango, and I... instead of re-upping on Kaspersky, I went with the one that you suggested, starts with a B, the antivirus and the malware bytes and all that stuff. Okay,
sure.
So that's been working fine. So my dad, who's 86 and just uses a computer just for email and looking up some things, getting something off of Amazon, I had had Kaspersky for his laptop, and then for some reason, he lives in Florida, I'm up here. So for some reason, somebody down there who helped him with the computer took Kaspersky off, and so he doesn't have an antivirus. So when I got the notice to renew Kaspersky, I said, okay, let me do that, forgetting that he didn't have it on his computer. Anyways, long story short, I was able to use TeamViewer to get onto his computer and look and see what's going on from
good,
up
good.
There.
Nice.
And I said, okay, Dad, you need to get Kaspersky. I have it. I'm paying for it. You might as well put it on. You need something. So he had malware bytes. I'm sure the guy, whoever was helping him, probably had that on, but it wasn't active. And when I went to install Kaspersky, it said it's incompatible with Malwarebytes. So, oh, Bitdefender, that was the one I got.
Right.
So, right. So my question is that accurate, that Malwarebytes won't work with Kaspersky?
Hmm. Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
If both of them are running full time, they will interfere with each other.
Okay.
And so that's bad. So, again, maybe Bitdefender would be a better choice, or you can run Malwarebytes. Did he pay for Malwarebytes?
I don't know, but it didn't seem to be active, so I just uninstalled it.
There you go. I was just going to say, if he's not using it full time, uninstall it and put, you're paying for Kaspersky anyway, put Kaspersky on his machine.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was kind of weird that I know Malwarebytes works with Bitdefender, but then that it wouldn't with Kaspersky, and I wanted to make sure with you all, because you know much more than I do about this, you know, was that the right way to go? So
you did the right thing.
Yeah.
Well done, you.
Yes. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you. I have to say my dad is not patient, but we made it through, and I haven't gotten any phone calls, so I guess it's working.
That's
all
the
right.
key.
Yes, you're a good daughter.
Yes, thank you. So my next question is there something more I should do for his computer other than it's Kaspersky Internet Security?
No.
I think you're good.
Okay. No, he's good to go.
Good.
Let him just enjoy it.
Excellent. I appreciate it. Love all your advice, and we'll continue to listen and support you.
Thank you very much.
Christine. We love to hear that. Thank you.
That's so nice.
Thanks, guys. Bye bye.
Goodbye. Well, that was really nice.
That was very nice. That was very sweet.
It's nice that she's helping take care of Dad.
Exactly.
As a dad
right.
myself with daughters, I hope that I'll earn that same. Okay,
Walter. Hold on. Yeah, my daughter continues to remind me she will pick my nursing home.
Yes. Yes.
So, well, I have to be nice to her.
And she knows where the brake pedal is, too. So
that's it. She certainly knows that. God bless her.
She's taking care of you, and you didn't even know it.
And I didn't even know it. Yeah, exactly.
At the very moment when you needed it most.
Exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece again. What's up, Walter?
Welcome back.
Forgive me, Father. I was on the computer while I was listening to your show at the same time.
It happens.
Yep. Okay. Well, the reason I'm calling is that I did go to your website, and then I went over to support at Google and found that it's only compatible with 64-bit machines. And basically, if its machine was made before 2010, well, forget it. It probably will give you a very poor experience.
Yeah. No, that would not surprise me. Okay. So you've got 12 years worth of equipment that you can pick from. But 32-bit, no go.
Yeah, and even it's very interesting when you look at the list on some of the Dells, the support ends next year because they were already cloud ready before, apparently, and that's it. They're not giving any support. And as you said, 12 years, well, you had your fun run.
Right. Well, okay. It's not magic.
Now we know.
You know, the thing you got to remember is it's not magic.
Right.
You can find versions of Linux for 32-bit systems that will run on anything.
Yeah.
Google clearly not interested in supporting those, but Linux is a much more open source community, and there are people who still want to support 32-bit. And as long as there are, then you will be able to run 32-bit software.
Right. And indeed, I took a look further, and Google ended its Chrome support for 32-bit Linux is back in 2019. So,
right.
That's it. Yeah, I'll keep searching because I asked you last week about Raspberry Pi for 32-bit machines, and the poor thing thought I was actually on a Raspberry Pi, said I made up an account, and then told me to reboot. And I'm running it off the disk, and and it's like, well, okay, if I reboot, I'm starting from scratch all over again.
Right.
And PsychOS was just too much. I cannot believe just what that guy threw on to that desktop. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, and I also then tried Refracta. It looked very interesting, but it stalled. I tried several downloads, repeat, burning, and didn't go anywhere. So I'll just keep. I may just be sticking with Q4OS. So
that sounds like a plan.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you again for your time. I appreciate it. Great program as always. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks for calling back with that answer.
Yep. Yeah. Finding a good 32-bit Linux.
Yes.
There are some. I mean, there. You know, yep. I think a version. There's a 32-bit version of Ubuntu. I think.
Okay.
If I could type, I would be able to know that better.
Now you're getting older.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah, Debian, Bode, Alpine, OpenSUSE, Porteus. I've used Debian, love Debian. I've used OpenSUSE. I was thinking back the other day, I was talking to somebody, the very first Linux I ever used was Yggdrasil. Yggdrasil, whatever. The name of the world tree in Norse mythology.
Oh.
And it was one of the very first bootable Linuxes.
Okay.
You know,
from like what?
Linus Torvalds, 93,
yeah.
Came out with Linux.
Right.
Or as he pronounces it, Linux.
Linux.
And the folks at Yggdrasil put out it was $60. But I was very excited by it, so I bought it, installed it on a machine. Didn't do much.
Yeah.
Did it all in the text mode, but it did it on the console, and it was great. I used it for a while. We were just talking about early Linux, and how there were only a few. You know, you could have Yggdrasil, you could have Slackware.
Oh yeah.
You know, that was, there were like maybe yeah, three or four, and then. Now, today, you go
so
to...
So many different flavors.
DistroWatch.com, and you can't get through the list in a day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's... A lot of people prefer an unencumbered operating system, as they say. And so, you know, they don't want to use Linux. They don't want to use Chrome. Although Chrome is Linux-based.
Yeah.
They don't want to use Microsoft. They don't want to use Chrome. They don't want to use Mac, although that is Mac-based. So, you know, they've migrated to Linux. There are versions of Linux that are encumbered by proprietary software. Ubuntu is one of them. You can elect not to use most of that stuff, but not all of it. But much of Debian is still unencumbered.
The library is unbelievable.
Well, that's the big thing. You know, when you've got 150,000 programs you can download for free, why would you not?
And yeah, I mean, it just covers the gambit of anything and everything that you want to do. And if it's not there, quite often you can go to, say, that particular software person and say, well, do you have a Linux version? Because nowadays, a lot of them are doing both Windows, Mac, and Linux, because they're seeing a lot of folks want to get away from Windows.
Right.
And, you know, quite often, the Linux machines take less horsepower and resources to run than the PC does. Because Windows is a memory hog, and they make no qualms about that. They tell you right up front, well, you need this much memory in there. Whereas Linux, they'll sit there, oh, no, we can run plenty faster on...
I mean, take a look at things like Puppy Linux and Damn Small Linux. They run on nothing machines nowadays. But there are, yeah, and again, there are a lot of 32-bit version systems. Q4OS, as Walter said, Slax, Ubuntu Mate, Zorin OS Lite, Xubuntu has a 32-bit version. I use the 64-bit version on all my machines. Linux Mint. XFCE has a 32-bit version.
Oh, that's very Windows-like, too.
Very Windows-like. Peppermint Linux, Elubuntu. I mean, there's lots of 32-bit Linuxes. And, again, most of them have no proprietary software at all. So you can be very sure that what you're running is unencumbered by anything. I mean, we all know Microsoft, Google, Apple track people, know what they're doing, sell that information to advertisers at least, if not other manufacturers. Apple fills up your machine with bloatware like mad. And I get that. But you can buy, you can get for free.
Yeah.
Operating systems don't do any of that.
But the key thing, though, that I have to add to that, though, is you also have to be the type of person that is willing to spend some time. You're going to get frustrated at times because installing these operating systems, it can be a challenge, and learning something different. Because if you've been using, say, Windows for the past 20 years, and all of a sudden go to a Linux operating system, be prepared to spend quite a bit of time. Like I said, you're going to get frustrated, but it can also be a lot of fun in the stuff that you can do with it. And the big key that I can't stress enough is if you're thinking of doing something, check out the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Right.
The YouTube videos will help cover a lot of stuff, walk you through stuff, and teach you a lot. So take the but that's the thing. You've got to put the time in to get the effort out.
Right. Yeah. Right. It rewards your curiosity more than anything else.
Oh, it's a lot of fun.
But if you don't want to bring curiosity to it, then it's going to be more frustration.
Oh, definitely, because, right. You know, like I say, folks get intimidated. Well, you got to go to a terminal window. What's a terminal window? You know, they've not seen it because
back in the day, that's all you had, but nobody sees them anymore.
Yeah, we don't.
Uncle Larry had something that was terminal. Turned out he died 3 days later.
Yeah. Yeah. Or DOS window, you know, that's what a lot of folks equate it to is the DOS window. Right. And you had to do write batch files and everything else. Well, in Linux, yeah, you open up a terminal and you can run commands. You got to learn different commands. But it's not something that, you know, is totally.
But with the new versions of Linux, you don't ever have to go to the command line.
A lot of it, yeah, it's there.
It's convenient. It's easy. It's faster. But you don't have to do it.
Yeah.
No, I get that.
Yeah, it's just a lot of. It's fun if you want to play around with an old machine, and learn something new, because like I say, the way Windows is slowly turning things around, you know, higher demand for higher end machines, which right now it's getting pretty hard to even find those because of the chip shortage.
Sure.
And, you know, the prices are going up and up and up. And, you know, you don't want to keep paying for this software because eventually that's where Windows is going to go. It will be, if not this year or next, it's going to be a paid subscription.
They've already told their shareholders that's where it's going.
Yeah.
And you do not lie to the shareholders.
No, yeah.
So, and that's the direction it's going to go. So, you know, that's why we encourage you folks either check out Chrome or, you know, Linux.
Or Chrome OS. Yeah, Chromebook or Chrome OS Flex. If you buy a Chromebook, setting it up is as easy as opening it up and putting in your Gmail information.
Yep, put in your Gmail address and the password with it, and
you're done.
Everything else happens.
Yep, yep. If you're looking for the easiest computer to use, it's a Chromebook.
Oh, yes.
There is no question of that.
Very little thought.
And it will do everything most people want to do. Beyond that, you know, there are people who... There are people who stick with Windows because they've always stuck with Windows.
That's all they know.
I mean, I get that. I do. It's like people who've never bought anything but a Ford. Right? I mean, or a Chevy whatever.
If that's your thing.
If that's your thing, that's your thing. And I'm not going to talk against it because that's your thing. But for people who are looking for something easier.
Something different.
If you can go to a Chromebook. If you're looking for something different, you can also look at Linux. If you're looking for something different and free, you go to something like Linux. If you're looking for something different and to pay for, then you go to a Mac or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got an old machine, I really wish I could put a Mac OS on an old machine. But it would be an Intel machine. They don't even do that anymore.
Yeah, no, the Hackintosh community.
Right.
Yeah, it's...
Now, you can...
It's always been super fringe.
Right. You can get Linux front ends that look like a Mac.
Sure.
So that's nice.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that there's nothing unique or magical about the Linux, about the Macintosh or Windows GUIs. There are Linux GUIs that absolutely mimic them, 100%, including the color schemes and the buttons on the right, left instead of the right, and all everything. So, you know, that's personal preference. But what's underneath can be something you pay for, something that's free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really that simple. And if it's free, maybe it takes you a little bit of time and effort to really learn to deal with correctly. But the fact is,
it's there.
It's free.
And it's there for you.
And it's there for you. And you can very easily run those machines regularly. If you know, when I get an old machine to set up for somebody, I will either put now, of course, I'll probably put Flex on it, Chrome OS Flex on it, because that's simple and easy and all of that. But I used to put a version of Linux on it, and then if they were originally Mac people, I put a front end that looked like a Mac. Mm-hmm. If they were Windows people, I put a front end that looked like Windows. Not that hard.
But one other great thing about Linux, and unlike Windows, that, you know, if it needs updates, sure. Windows, you could wait months, maybe even a year, and they'll finally get around to patch things. In the Linux world, it's done right away. And updates can happen behind the scenes that you don't even have to worry about.
Right.
It'll just do them and on it goes. It's
every happened. Once in a while you get a thing that says you got to reboot.
Yeah.
But generally, again, as we said to one of our callers, you can just shut down at the end of the day, and next time you open it up, start it up.
Boom. There you go.
You got the new stuff. My home system, which is on 24/7, updates something just about every day.
Mm-hmm.
None of it interrupts me unless there's a whole new version of the operating system.
Yep.
And that's fairly rare. So, it's constantly updating. It's constantly being refreshed. It's constantly running the latest and greatest and most protected and most secure. So, for that reason alone, I absolutely love it. I get how easy it is to go up to the Mac and say about this Mac and check for updates and, you know, fine. I get that. I don't even have to do that much.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens. Magic happens.
But like I said, though, and there's a community out there that's always looking to update and improve. If something is broken, you're not waiting weeks and months. It's usually days, if that.
Yeah,
and a patch will be out there to correct this or that. That was broken. Well, we got it fixed. There's a whole community that's around that, and that's unbelievable.
Yep, we've often seen serious patches that take, you know, Microsoft only updates on Patch Tuesday.
If we're lucky.
Rarely outside Patch
once
Tuesday.
Once a month, yeah.
So that's once a month. I have seen a notice that there was a problem in a program and the Linux version was fixed the next day. It doesn't get any faster than that. There's still got to be time to write it and test it and all of that stuff, and it takes them a day.
Yep.
It can't beat that. So we're very pleased with the Linux community. They're hardworking folks. And a lot of them, you say, well, you know, they're volunteer. Not all of them. Canonical pays people. Microsoft pays Linux people to write Linux code. A lot of companies do. Red Hat does. So a lot of those companies are paying programmers to write stuff, because while you can use it for free, it's like that program I was just saying. I wasn't going to pay $99 for it because all of the additional features are really business features that I don't need.
Right.
And the same is true of, you know, you can use a version of Ubuntu absolutely free, but if you're a company, you can pay for support and security from Canonical. That's how they make their money. So they can afford to hire programmers to keep the software up to date, and that software is just as available to the home user as it is to the business user. So it's not just a bunch of wild-eyed neckbeards sitting in their home, in their mother's basements, writing code while they eat Cheetos. Often it's a bunch of neckbeards sitting in an office somewhere being paid to write code while they eat Cheetos. So, yeah, it's all doable and it's all good. And if you've got an old machine sitting around running something like Chrome OS Flex on it is probably something that would be an easy upgrade to a machine that's just sitting around utterly unusable right now anyway. You know, with Macs, you can still now, with an old Mac sitting in a closet, you can't update it anymore.
Yep.
Just like you can't update an old Windows system anymore.
Sure.
A lot of them. But you can put Chrome OS Flex on both of those now, depending on the model and how old and blah, 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 blah. I get it. Or you can take an old Mac and put Linux on it.
True.
There are Linux versions for those. So you don't have to, old machines don't die. What?
There's a lot of flexibility out there.
Yep. All right, that's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. Once again, thanks to Dennis Worster. He's always a joy to have here. We love having him come, and he, you know, takes time out from his very busy life to give us the benefit of his wisdom and expertise and the nonsense that he spouts. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here in the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.